Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yaki in Washington. Ahead, a powerful, deadly blast shakes Istanbul, Turkey. The UN Security Council considers the urgent humanitarian crisis in Syria. Our White House correspondent previews President Obama's last State of the Union address. And rumors that singer Janet Jackson is suffering from cancer.
That caused, obviously, a lot of panic among Janet Jackson fans and then a lot of discussion about why she had not come forward with this information.
It's right here on The Voice of America. A suicide bomber is believed to be responsible for today's blast in Istanbul that killed at least 10 people and wounded 15 others. Correspondent Luis Ramirez is following the story for us and joins us on the line from our bureau in London. Welcome, Luis.
Hi, Susan.
What do we know about this explosion?
Well, we know that at least 10 people are dead, that the government of Turkey now suspects that it was a suicide bomber with Syrian links. Now, this latest revelation comes as no surprise. The Turkish government has been battling the Islamic State group for a number of months now. It has stepped up that fight since the election victory of President Erdogan's party.
The Turkish president responded rather quickly to news of this explosion.
An explosion like this would trigger a very quick reaction from the government, which is pretty much always on a state of alert, since it is battling both the Islamic State group and also the armed Kurdish separatist movement in southeastern Turkey. We remember that Turkey's border with Syria is a pretty volatile area. In the past couple of months, Turkish forces have stepped up their campaign against both of these groups.
Well, this is all part of escalating violence in the nation.
For the last year, the Turkish government has been stepping up, as I mentioned, its campaign against both the Islamic State group and against the Kurdish armed insurgents in the southeast of the country. Now, just a few months ago in October, Turkey saw its worst terrorist attack in many, many years. More than 100 people killed in Ankara. It was a peace rally. And the Turkish government said that it is the Islamic State group that is behind it. So the country has been very much on alert, security forces following very carefully any hint of Islamic State activity. There are Islamic State militants operating, I wouldn't say out in the open, but certainly very, very much systematically in many of Turkey's cities.
Today's blast occurred right in the heart of the tourist district. Are people concerned how this and other incidents are affecting the tourism industry in the nation?
Well, certainly it's believed that a number of German, possibly French tourists and from other countries were in this area. It is Sultanahmet Square, which is right in the heart of old Istanbul. This is the area where Hagia Sophia, the Blue Mosque, and other iconic places in the main city of Turkey are. And so this is a concentration of tourists that's always there. Clearly, it would be seen by the Turkish government as an attempt to harm both the tourism industry and Turkey's image overseas. The Islamic State, of course, is trying to ultimately establish an Islamist regime throughout this region. And any hint of or any trace of Western influence is something they would go after.
Well, thank you very much, Luis.
Thank you, Susan.
With a look at what is being said on the web today, social media, about this story, is our reporter Olin Akasholu. Welcome, Olin, to the studio.
Hi, Susan. Worldwide, hashtag Istanbul and hashtag Sultanahmet started trending very soon after news of the explosion in Istanbul's Sultanahmet Square. The most common response from people on social media is disbelief, and many people are tweeting messages saying their hearts and prayers are with the victims. Recently, people have also started using a Pray for Istanbul hashtag, similar to Pray for Paris and Pray for Beirut, which were used after terrorist attacks in those cities last year. A lot of people are also saying, oh, I've been there, or I was just there X years ago, which makes sense because Sultanahmet Square is one of the biggest tourist attractions in the city. There's also an image that's been floating around social media since this morning that purports to show the moment that the explosion occurred. It appears to have been taken on a cell phone camera, and you can see what appears to be the explosion in the corner of the frame next to the obelisk of Theodosius, which is in the center of the square. People have also been using Google Maps to share some perspective on where exactly in Istanbul the blast occurred, sharing shots of a bird's eye view taken over the site.
Well, Olin, let me ask your personal opinion. Did Twitter play an important role in sharing the news after the explosion?
Yes. People were tweeting this morning that the Turkish government had started blocking news organizations from broadcasting about the explosion. But the Turkish population is very engaged on Twitter, so for a lot of people, that may have been the best way to get news about the explosion in the hours after it occurred. Then when Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoglu made a televised speech about the incident later, many people started tweeting what he had said, that so far all the dead were foreign nationals. And then after Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan made a speech following the incident, people also began sharing his words that the attacker was a Syrian national.
Okay, well, thank you, Olin.
You bet, Susan.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
NASA is taking the potential threat posed by near-Earth objects, such as asteroids and comets, more seriously than ever, and has established the new Planetary Defense Coordination Office. The space agency says the new office will oversee all of its efforts in finding and characterizing all celestial objects that travel close to Earth as they orbit the sun. It will also coordinate any actions within and outside of NASA that may be needed to respond to such potential threats. Near-Earth objects are found by astronomers who use a worldwide network of ground-based telescopes as well as NASA's space-based NEOWISE infrared telescope. So far, astronomers have discovered more than 13,500 near-Earth objects, which vary in size from small boulders to those that are hundreds of kilometers in diameter. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The UN Security Council has met to discuss the urgent humanitarian crisis in Syria, where hundreds of thousands of people, mostly civilians, have been trapped for months in areas besieged by opposition and government-backed forces. More than 60 trucks loaded with food, blankets, and medical supplies were able to reach the towns of Madeya, with a population of more than 40,000 near the Lebanese border, and Fawa and Kefreya in Idlib province, with about 20,000 more people near Turkey. New Zealand's UN ambassador, Gerhard van Bomen, calls the tactic of siege and starvation one of the most appalling characteristics of the five-year Syrian conflict, and called for more humanitarian relief columns.
As everybody said, this has to be just a start. It can't be this is just a one-off situation. To allow humanitarian relief is an obligation under international humanitarian law. So we're calling on all concerned to facilitate humanitarian access throughout Syria. It's absolutely essential. We recognize that a political solution is the answer to the wider problem, but humanitarian access cannot be held hostage to the politics.
Syria's UN ambassador, Bashar Ja'afari, insisted his government is committed to cooperating with aid agencies, but said much of the information about Madeya is based on false information and blamed what he called armed terrorist groups for the crisis.
The reality of the so-called besieged hard-to-reach areas is that some of those areas are controlled by terrorist groups who are using civilians as human shields. And other areas are besieged from the terrorist groups who are preventing the delivery of humanitarian assistance.
Ja'afari insisted there was no shortage of humanitarian aid in Madaya, but aid workers say they found 400 Syrians in the town suffering from starvation, malnourishment, and other illnesses that need immediate medical evacuation for treatment. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said the United States is pressing all parties on humanitarian access to Madeya. Regional analyst Alan Payand, director of Middle East Studies at Ohio State University, told VOA's Victor Beatty there is blame to go around for this humanitarian disaster.
first of all, it's Bashar al-Assad, which is really committing atrocities against his own people and using the assistance from Russia and Iran. So these are the two outsiders that who are really supporting the government against the wishes of the people. Bashar al-Assad is representing only a minority in the country, the Alawites, which are between 11% to 13% estimated. So the overwhelming majority of the Syrians are Sunni Muslims, and they are suffering at the hands of this minority group. And also the international community's fault is that they did not prevent this sort of genocide going on. More than half of the population has become either internally displaced or have become refugees. It's one of the worst humanitarian crises of our time, I should say.
Is this the result of opposition forces or, again, Syrian forces?
Both sides are using starvation as a weapon against each other. So this is the problem. The government is using against the opposition, and the opposition is using against the loyal to the government. Both sides are committing atrocities.
Apparently, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There may be as many as 400,000 Syrians living in besieged areas, half of whom are in Islamic State-controlled areas in the northern province of Deir ez-Zor.
The environment became very conducive to the Islamic State, so they're making headways because the people who are left out, they do not get assistance from their neighbors. They are not getting food from the international organizations. So they become vulnerable to different kind of ideologies from the left and the right.
Will the revelation of this starvation and humanitarian aid disaster give impetus to the peace process in Geneva?
I do not know. The United States, its elections are coming. The Republicans are blaming the Obama administration for failing in the Middle East. Sometimes the global security becomes the victim of the domestic policies and domestic politics of these countries also. The policies from the United States is not very consistent.
The latest multinational effort to broker a peace deal is scheduled for January 25th, when the UN Special Envoy for Syria plans to bring the warring sides together for peace talks in Geneva. The last rounds of UN brokered talks 2 years ago ended with little progress. Coming up on International Edition, a preview of an Obama milestone. And Janet Jackson says no to health rumors. For the final time of his presidency, Barack Obama will address the U.S. Congress and the American public in his State of the Union address. Correspondent Arup Pandey has joined us here in the studio. She's usually over at the White House, and she's got a preview for us. Welcome, Arup.
Thank you for having me.
Well, what can we expect from the president?
Well, White House officials say this is not going to be a conventional State of the Union. As you noted, this is his last State of the Union, and basically the last time he'll address both Congress and public and the American public in this way. And they say the president is really going to strike a tone of optimism. Unlike in last year and years past, the White House hasn't rolled out a number of legislative initiatives and priorities and measures they want to get done in the remaining months. Instead, the White House says the president is really going to set a tone for where he wants to see the country going, what direction it should be going in, not just, you know, in the next few years, but for generations to come. So it's a very broad theme. And from what I gather, the White House says President Obama really wants to counter some of the negativity that the country has been hearing, not just in Republican presidential campaigns, but even among Republican lawmakers who say the country is a mess. There's no coherent strategy to fight the Islamic State. So I think the president is going to come out forcefully with a message of optimism, saying, look, we've made a great deal of progress in the last 7 years, and we will continue on this path, and we are, you know, prepared to handle any challenges that come ahead.
The presidency has been marred by this Republican-Democratic fight going on Capitol Hill, not being able to get things through the Congress. This was one of the major points of his presidency, was to try to get things done. Is this a big disappointment that he's gotten to his last major State of the Union address and there's still a problem on Capitol Hill?
I think he's more resigned to the fact that this is the way it has been, not just in the last year or two, but for several years of his presidency. But he's really made the last years of his presidency been very productive. Coming off a losing, you know, congressional election and losing his Democratic majority in Congress, instead of laying low and saying, look, this is, I can't do much, you've seen such huge, huge initiatives undertaken by the administration last year, at least overseas with the Iran nuclear agreement, with the climate change initiative, with normalizing ties with Cuba. So you've seen a president who's instead galvanized, almost saying, look, I know my hands are tied when it comes to Congress, but I'm going to do all I can in my power, in the administration's power, to try to see what I can get done in the areas that I wanted to accomplish things.
One of the issues that he did not get accomplished is the gun control measures he wants. Do you think he'll be talking about that at all in tonight's speech?
I do think that he will. He's already, I think, resigned to the fact that during his administration, we're not going to see sweeping, you know, gun reform legislation. He alluded to that in a recent New York Times opinion piece that he wrote, where he said it's not going to happen during my presidency, but he is going to make it known again how he feels and how the American public should feel about the issue. He's been really strong on it. Even though his hands may be tied in terms of what Congress can do, he wants the American public to understand how important these common sense gun reforms are.
Well, it's always nice to have you come by. Thank you, Aru.
Thank you for having me.
And we should mention for our listeners that VOA coverage of President Obama's State of the Union address to the nation begins at 2 hours Universal Time Wednesday. The two-hour program will feature anchor Milt Arcega, as well as senior political analyst Jim Malone and congressional correspondents Cindy Sain and Michael Bowman. This is VOA.
Green beet for a healthier planet.
Tasmanian devils are in danger, and not the kind that comes from Looney Tunes.
What's up, Dad?
The real Tasmanian devil is being threatened by a rare contagious cancer that has killed up to 90% of the wild population in some parts of the Australian state of Tasmania. While breeding programs try to bring back their numbers, conservationists are using high-tech gadgetry to keep disease-free devils from falling victim to another problem.
Some of these little populations only have two or three mums breeding now, and if two or three of those get hit by a car, that's it.
David Pemberton manages the Save the Devil program. He says a virtual fence that alerts wildlife to approaching vehicles has shown promising results.
Well, the section of road without the virtual fence, there were four devils run over. The other section, there were none.
When a signpost detects approaching headlights, it sets off an alarm and begins flashing lights, keeping Tasmanian devils and other wildlife from trying to cross the road. I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Green Beat.
Singer Janet Jackson is denying reports that she had to cancel some dates on her Unbreakable tour because she had throat cancer. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA's Soul Lounge host, Shauna Renee, about the story and Jackson's latest album.
Back in October, late October, she announced that she had to cancel or postpone. She was postponing dates in Kansas City and in St. Louis. And then we started to hear some talk about her having some problems with her voice. And this is not unusual. A lot of artists, when they go out on tour, overextend themselves, and then they end up with injuries to their vocal cords. So the first assumption was that's what was going on. But then all of a sudden, we started to hear rumors that perhaps she was suffering or had been diagnosed with throat cancer. And that caused, obviously, a lot of panic among Janet Jackson fans and then a lot of discussion about why she had not come forward with this information. Now, we do know that Janet is a very private person. It's very rare to hear anything about personal about Janet. I mean, she's very open when it comes to her music, her inspiration, but her health, her family, her marriage, we know nothing about. But I guess the rumors had gotten so bad that she had to come out and say that no, she is not suffering from throat cancer. And it had gotten so bad that there were people saying that, you know, her parents were having issue or were freaked out because they didn't want to lose another child. I mean, this rumor it got its legs and it took off.
Well, now, also, Janet didn't help things by being somewhat cryptic in her first response. She put out a video of one of her songs as her statement. And it's, you know, we're talking about The Great Forever. Wait a minute. great forever. That's like eternity.
Right.
Like heaven.
Yeah. What does that mean? Yeah, that's true. And again, I think that goes sort of toward how Janet Jackson has always been. She's always been kind of cryptic, and she always takes her time in terms of coming out and saying what it is that she really means. And maybe, and this is just speculation on my part, maybe they were not sure of what exactly was going on. And so rather than deny it before you can confirm it, if you know what I mean, she said, let me just hold off. Now, in her statement, she said that the doctors have given her permission to move forward with her European tour dates and that she will come back around and play the cities that she couldn't get to here in the States. So it looks like things are moving forward, which is very good for her because the album wasn't doing well. The songs weren't charting as well. And we do know nowadays in 2016, you make your money on the tour. And so she stood to lose a lot of money had this tour been canceled. Not to say that if the rumors were true, that would matter as much, but, you know, it matters.
All right. Well, what do you think? Do you have an opinion about Janet Jackson's tour, about her health, about her music? Let us know. You can tweet to Shauna. She is at VOA Lady DJ. You can also log on to our website. That's voanews.com.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again, go to the Programs tab on our website at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The end of the year 2015 brought with it encouraging news. For over 42 consecutive days, no new cases of the Ebola virus disease were reported in Guinea. This development marks the end of the original chain of transmission in the West African Ebola outbreak. Ebola is a viral hemorrhagic fever with average mortality rates ranging from 25 to 90%, depending on the specific strain. According to the World Health Organization, by the end of December 2015, this most recent outbreak resulted in 28,638 cases of the disease and 11,315 deaths across 10 countries, including the three hardest hit, Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. The epidemic began in Guinea in December 2013 and soon spread, at first undetected, through Guinea and into neighboring Liberia and Sierra Leone. The World Health Organization's announcement of no new cases means that the three countries have successfully broken this deadly chain of transmission and are now recovering from the disease. This represents a significant milestone for Guinea, West Africa, and the international community, wrote Deputy Assistant to the U.S. President for Homeland Security, Amy Pope, in a recent blog post. Nonetheless, she wrote, West Africa is still at risk of reemergence of Ebola and other infectious disease threats. Reintroduction of the disease from survivors or animal sources is still possible, and amidst the chaos of the epidemic, other diseases, such as malaria, have continued to flourish. The fragile health systems in the affected countries were overwhelmed and need time and investment to recover. That is why the United States, along with other countries that aided the West African communities hardest hit by the epidemic, continue to work with Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia to develop long-term capacity to prevent, detect, and respond to infectious disease outbreaks. And since the economies of all three countries were hammered by the epidemic, we are helping them restore basic health services and assisting economic recovery. Addressing the unique needs of the most vulnerable members of society is also critical to restoring a positive development trajectory to the region. The U.S. government stands ready to help respond to any new cases of Ebola and continues to work with the governments of the affected countries and partners to sustain the gains made by building local capacity, wrote Ms. Pope. The United States is committed to standing with Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone now and into the future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.